Government Chairman, Commerce. As the Chairman has indicated, and as many of you know, a speech about the Soviet Union is not a new experience for me. In fact, I have been talking about it ever since 1917. And always from the same point of view. And I wish to begin my remarks tonight by restating the opinion that I have held about the Soviet Union ever since it first came into existence 39 years ago. Next November. And by presenting my credentials, so to speak, to talk once again about the great new things that have been happening there to an audience which I take it is friendly, as I am to the Soviet Union, and who believe, as I do, that the interests and the destiny of the international working class is indissolubly bound up with the interests and the destiny of the Soviet Union. We Trotskyists regard the Russian Revolution of 1917 as the great dividing line in history. Ascending world capitalism came to a halt there on November 7th, 1917, and met its first defeat and entered into its irrevocable decline. The Russian Revolution signalized the real beginning of humanity's march to the higher and better order of socialism. All social progress in modern times dates from November 7, 1917. We have always regarded the Russian Revolution not as an end in itself, but as the starting point of the international revolution. And for that reason, from that socialist internationalist standpoint, we have been partisans and defenders of the Soviet Union and the Russian Revolution, which brought it into existence ever since 1917. Everything that has happened in the 39-year evolution of the Soviet Union has always had a burning interest for us from that international socialist point of view. And everything that we have said and done, either in praise or in criticism, in all the intervening time, has been governed by the single criterion: what is good for the revolution, for the defense of the Soviet Union, and for the extension of the revolution throughout the world. That was our criterion in defending the revolution in its first difficult years, when the combined imperialist powers tried to strangle the young revolution in the cradle. That was our criterion in the 20s, when we first came out in support of the left opposition in the Russian party, in the internal struggle against the bureaucratic degeneration of the revolution under Stalin. The left opposition, which began its fight in Russia in the 20s, fought under the great slogans of Soviet democracy, industrialization, and for revolutionary internationalism, and for the defense of the Soviet Union by the policy of international class struggle. We were governed by the same criterion: what is good for the Soviet Union and for its extension throughout the world. In the 30s, when we denounced the Moscow trials as frame-ups and protested against the physical extermination of the old Bolsheviks who were the victims of those trials. And we bring the same criterion, the same basic point of view about the Soviet Union to the present consideration of the new revelations now coming out of Moscow about the monstrous crimes of Stalin and Stalinism, and we discuss them as partisans and defenders of the Soviet Union. I state that by way of introduction to establish the theme of all that I will have to say tonight. The news coming from the 20th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union represents progress in all respects. In the first place, the economic reports show the tremendous development of the productive forces of the Soviet Union, including its military potential. Thanks to the revolution and the new social system of nationalized property and planned production created and made possible by the revolution, the Soviet Union is no longer a backward country. It stands second only to the United States, and its rate of development is greater than that of the United States. In the second place, the 20th Congress occurred at a moment when the extension of the revolution and the abolition of capitalist property forms in Eastern Europe and in China and the rising tide of the colonial revolution and the innumerable weaknesses and dislocations in the world capitalist front have greatly improved the position of the Soviet Union in relation to the imperialist powers. Thanks to this extension of the revolution, the Soviet Union is no longer isolated and surrounded in a capitalist world. In international relations today, the Soviet Union obviously leads not from weakness, but from strength. It is the strength of the Soviet Union that compelled the imperialist powers headed by the United States to pause before the reckless gamble of a military attack, which had been the central feature of their world program for a long time. And finally, the events of the 20th Congress represent progress because a part of the truth of what has been going on inside the Soviet Union for a long time to undermine it and endanger it, a part of the truth about that was revealed at the 20th Congress for the first time. And truth is always the ally of progress. In the new revelations, and others that are yet to come, we see the distorted reflections in the top circles of the Soviet bureaucracy of a new stage in the development of the Russian Revolution, a progressive stage. The Soviet masses are beginning to stir, and that's why the tops are shaking. The wholesale denunciation and repudiation of Stalin, 3 years after he is safely dead, sensational and far-reaching as it is, marks only the beginning. The whole story of the monstrous crimes of Stalin and Stalinism has not yet been told. Far from it. But the heirs and accomplices of Stalin, by their preliminary revelations, have set in motion a process that they will never be able to control. It will not stop until the full truth is known, and until every vestige of Stalinism in the Soviet Union has been swept away by the Soviet masses, and until this foul disease is eradicated from the international labor movement. The truth is on the march again, and nothing can stop it. The truth is always progressive. The truth is revolutionary. The subject of our discussion tonight is provided by the speech of Khrushchev in the closing session of the 20th Congress, February 24 and 25. The text of this speech was leaked to the diplomatic representatives of the various foreign powers and was freely referred to in the press more than 2 months ago. On June 4th, the text of the speech of 26,000 words was issued to the press by the United States Department. It was published in full in the New York Times the next day, June 5th, and brought no denial or repudiation from the Kremlin. The current issue of the Militant, which you have in your hands, I think, which went to press a week ago, carried the full text of this speech in 4 pages. Finally, the New York Daily Worker, in its last weekend edition, also printed the entire text, as released by the U.S. State Department, without in any way challenging its authenticity. So when we discuss the speech as it has been printed in these various publications I have named, we can take it we are discussing the speech, at least part of the speech, as it was actually delivered at the 20th Congress. The Daily Worker says, in its weekend edition, that it is publishing the speech as a contribution to the effort, here I quote, to explore ways and means of uniting socialist-minded Americans and of advancing socialist ideas, unquote. And then it adds, we hope, too, that communists, readers of our paper, and other socialist-minded Americans will contribute their thinking to the problems confronted the Marxist movement in the discussion of this subject. I agree with that sentiment. business-minded workers to take part in the discussion also includes me. And I hope I'm not mistaken about that. My remarks tonight can be taken as a response to the invitation of the daily worker. Although, to be perfectly frank with you, I will freely admit that the preparations for this meeting had already been made, and I would probably be making my speech anyway, even if the invitation had not been so kindly extended. The Daily Worker sets a good theme for the discussion when it says in its editorial, and here I quote again, "The State Department is dead wrong when it suggests that the evils of the Stalin era are inherent in socialism. The fact," says the Daily Worker, "is that the development of these evils created a peril for socialism. The repression, the injustice, the frame-up, the torture are a gross perversion of socialist principles," unquote. That's what the Weekend Worker said. I fully agree with that statement. That has always been our opinion, and we see less reason than ever to change it now. What is new and important in the Khrushchev report is that the crimes of Stalin against the Soviet Union, against the international working class, against socialism, are now admitted and confirmed by Stalin's most intimate collaborators, his hand-picked disciples, who were accomplices in those very crimes. Khrushchev's report is the testimony of an expert. He is the man who knows. He was there. And here are the main points of his testimony summarized. One, Khrushchev's report says that the Stalin regime was guilty of the mass murder of a whole generation of revolutionists who participated in the October 1917 revolution as comrades and co-workers of Lenin. Two, the Stalin regime systematically perpetrated frame-ups, tortures, the extraction of false confessions, and summary executions against countless thousands of innocent victims. Three, the Moscow trials of the 30s, beginning with the trials following the assassination of Kirov in 1934, were staged by Stalin's police machine and were judicial frauds from beginning to end. Four, the charge that the Trotskyists were spies, wreckers, and terrorists were sheer fabrication. Five, the Stalin regime promoted a Stalin cult, devoting enormous efforts to build the myth of his genius and his infallibility. It established a system of compulsory flattery, adulation, and fantastic glorification. And six, according to Khrushchev's report, the Stalin regime systematically falsified history to suit the needs of the omnipotent dictator in his struggle against his political enemies and to further his own deification. so says Khrushchev in his report. You have the whole text of the speech in the Militant, and you can verify for yourself the summary of its contents that I have just made. The long history of Stalinism and the struggle against it encompasses all the problems of the international labor movement for the past 30 years. Many books, classics of Marxism, have been written in the course of this struggle. It is the most important question in the world. Many lectures would be required to cover this vast field. And I will not attempt to cover it all tonight by any means. Here tonight, I wish to single out and quote Khrushchev's testimony about Stalin's method of dealing with honest revolutionary critics and opponents, because I consider that is the question which goes to the heart of all the other questions. How Stalin wiped out the whole generation of the companions of Lenin. Comrades, it is the most terrible story in all history. For the companions of Lenin, whom Stalin murdered, were the advance guard of humanity. They were the noblest and best that history has yet seen. And we should weep indeed for the slaughtered saints of the Great Revolution. 3 months ago, when the first reports of the 20th Congress came out, William C. Foster, the national chairman of the Communist Party, decided to sweep the whole business under the rug. He wrote a reassuring article for the Daily Worker. This old hack of Stalin, who has been applauding all his crimes for 30 years, came to Stalin's defense once again, 3 months ago. We haven't heard from him lately. But 3 months ago, he told the young Communist Party members in the Daily Worker, the young communists who were alarmed about the report, to take it easy. Wait till we get the official word from Moscow. Stalin did a lot of good, he said. Don't tear him to political. Then he admitted there might have been a few small mistakes, but nothing to get excited about. He asked, in this article I have mentioned, he asked with an innocent air, as if he didn't know, were some injustices committed in the purges? Well, here's what Khrushchev answered in the official report that he asked for. I'm now going to quote chapter and verse from Khrushchev's answer to Foster's question, were some injustices committed in the purge? Remember, as I quote, that this is not Trotsky speaking, it is Khrushchev repeating what Trotsky said
20 years ago, before he was assassinated by an agent of Stalin. I'm reading now direct quotations from Khrushchev's report. He said, "Stalin acted not through persuasion, explanation, and patient cooperation with people, but by imposing his concepts and demanding absolute submission to his opinion. Whoever opposed this concept or tried to prove his own viewpoint and the correctness of his position was doomed to removal from the leading collective and to subsequent moral and physical annihilation." That said Khrushchev. Again, Stalin originated the concept enemy of the people. This term automatically rendered it unnecessary that the ideological errors of a man or men engaged in a controversy be proved. This term made possible the usage of the most cruel repression, violating all norms of revolutionary legality, against anyone who in any way disagreed with Stalin. This concept, quote, enemy of the people, unquote, actually eliminated the possibility of any kind of ideological fight or the making of one's views known on this or that issue, even those of a practical character. In the main and in actuality, the only proof of guilt used against all norms of current legal science was the confession of the accused himself. And as subsequent probing proved, confessions were acquired through physical pressures against the accused. The formula enemy of the people was specifically introduced for the purpose of annihilating such individuals. It is a fact that many persons who were later annihilated as enemies of the party and people had worked with Lenin during his life. All those are the words of Khrushchev speaks of the purges, the frame-up trials, and the false confessions again as follows. Here I quote directly. "Government and economic activists who were branded in 1937-1938 as enemies were actually never enemies, spies, wreckers, and so forth, but were always honest communists. They were only so stigmatized and often no longer able to bear barbaric tortures, they charged themselves at the order of investigative judges, falsifiers, with all kinds of grave and unlikely crimes. The Commission has presented to the Central Committee lengthy and documented material pertaining to mass repressions against the delegates to the 17th Party Congress of 1934 and against members of the Central Committee elected at that 1934 Congress. These materials have been studied by the Presidium of the Central Committee. It was determined that of the 139 members and candidates of the party's Central Committee who were elected at the 17th Congress, 98%, that is 70%, were arrested and shot, mostly in 1937 and 1938. 38. That's not all. Khrushchev continues. The same fate met not only the Central Committee members, but also the majority of the delegates to the 17th Congress. Of 1,966 delegates with either voting or advisory rights, 1,108 persons were arrested on charges of anti-revolutionary crime. That is decidedly more than a majority of the delegates to the 1934 Congress. How were the false confessions obtained? Khrushchev says again, and here again I quote directly from his speech. Now, when the cases of some of these so-called spies and saboteurs were examined, it was found that all their cases were fabricated. Confessions of guilt of many arrested and charged with enemy activities were gained with the help of cruel and inhuman torture. Khrushchev doesn't rest with general statements. He gives specific examples. I'll read a couple. He says, an example of vile provocation, of odious falsification, and of criminal violation of revolutionary legality is the case of the former candidate for the Central Political Bureau, one of the most eminent workers of the party and of the Soviet government, Comrade Robert I. Ike, who was a member of the party since 1905. Ike was forced under torture to sign ahead of time a protocol of his confession prepared by the investigative judges, in which he and several other eminent party workers were accused of anti-Soviet activity. On October 1, 1939, Ike sent his declaration to Stalin, in which he categorically denied his guilt and asked for an examination of his case. This declaration of Ike said, quote, the case is as follows. Not being able to suffer the tortures to which I was submitted by Yushchakov and Nikolaev, and especially by the first one, who utilized the knowledge that my broken ribs had not properly mended and have caused me great pain, I have been forced to accuse myself and others. And Khrushchev commented, on February 4th, Ike was shot. It has been definitely established now that Ike's case was fabricated. He has been posthumously rehabilitated. Khrushchev gives another example. Quote, Comrade Rudzutak, candidate member of the Political Bureau, member of the party since 1905, who spent 10 years in a Tsarist hard labor camp, completely retracted in court the confession that was forced from him. And what happened? Sentence was pronounced on him in 20 minutes and he was shot. After careful examination of the case in 1955, it was established that the accusation against Rudzutak was false and that it was based on slanderous material. Roots attack has been rehabilitated posthumously. Khrushchev goes on and on. He asks, when Stalin said that one or another should be arrested, it was necessary to accept on faith that he was an enemy of the people. proofs were offered, the confessions of the arrested, and the investigative judges accepted these confessions. And how is it possible that a person confesses to crimes which he has not committed? We heard that over and over again when we were fighting against the Moscow trials in 36 and 37. We heard every day in the daily worker, they confessed, didn't they? That proves they're guilty. Well, here's what their confessions were worth, according to Khrushchev. How is it possible that a person confesses to crimes which he has not committed? Only in one way, because of the application of physical methods of pressuring him, torture, bringing him to a state of unconsciousness, deprivation of his judgment, taking away his human dignity. In this manner were confessions acquired. What I have just quoted at some length is only a small part of Khrushchev's testimony, which you can read for yourself. And his whole testimony tells only a small part of the truth. These terrifying revelations which have come out of the 20th Congress of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union raise questions which every honest communist is asking. They're asking it today at every meeting of the Communist Party where they have a chance. First, how was such a monstrous regime of frame-up and murder possible in the Soviet Union, which was created by a workers' revolution, which was led by the most honest, the most truly democratic party in all history? Who, if anybody, opposed this degeneration and spoke out against it, and what happened to them? And third, the $64,000 question which every honest communist is asking. All those who've been duped and deceived by the official Communist Party press are asking, why weren't we told this before? Khrushchev's answer to the last question, why weren't we told before, is not so much an answer as an excuse. It was dangerous to speak, he said. They were afraid of their lives. But since when do revolutionists tell the truth? Only when it is safe. What has become of the principle that a revolutionist must tell the truth to the people under all circumstances, as the Bolsheviks did under the Tsar? It is always dangerous to oppose a tyranny and tell the truth about it. It was dangerous for the Bolsheviks in Tsar's time, but that didn't stop them. They told the truth just the same, at the cost of imprisonment and death for many of them. And they organized an underground movement that eventually led to the greatest revolution in all history. There were people in the Soviet Union who recognized the danger of Stalin and Stalinism from the very beginning. They told the truth about it, too. And they led the fight against it from the beginning in 1923, 33 years ago. The organizers of the fight against Stalinism were the very same people who organized and led the October Revolution in 1917. The first one to denounce Stalin in writing and to demand his removal was Lenin. And the second was Trotsky. The same two men who led the great revolution nation under Stalin. On his sick bed, December 25th, 1922, Lenin wrote his testament to the party. This testament of Lenin, which has never yet been printed in the American Communist Press, and was suppressed in the Soviet Union under Stalin, is now being disclosed bit by bit. We have published it in the Militant and in a pamphlet years ago, which you can get at the literature stall if you wish. In this testament of Lenin, he said, here I quote, "Comrade Stalin, having become General Secretary, has concentrated an enormous power in his hands, and I am not sure that he always knows how to use that power with sufficient caution." That was the first warning of Lenin. And while he lay helpless, struggling with death in his last illness, Stalin was moving to consolidate his power, and Lenin became alarmed. And on January 4, 1923, a couple of weeks later, he added a postscript to his testament. And here is what he wrote in this postscript. I quote from the testament of Lenin. Postscript. Stalin is too rude, and this fault, entirely supportable in relations among us communists, becomes insupportable in the office of General Secretary. Therefore, I propose to the comrade to find a way to remove Stalin from that position and appoint to it another man who in all respects differs from Stalin only in superiority, namely, more patient, more loyal, more polite, and more attentive to comrades, less capricious, and so forth. So wrote Lenin in his testament to the party. Lenin, struggling with death, appealed to Trotsky at that time and offered to make a bloc with him to fight the growing bureaucratism in the party and in the state machine. Trotsky agreed, and in the last months of Lenin's life, they made a bloc to fight the bureaucratic degeneration. Lenin died in January 1924 without ever being able to return to his duties throughout the preceding year. Trotsky carried on the fight. That's the true explanation of the struggle, of how the struggle against Stalinism was started in the Soviet Union. And it's all coming out now. It is all documented. From the very beginning up to the latest events, and cannot be suppressed any longer. It is not true, comrades. It is not true, as Khrushchev pretends, that nobody dared to speak out against Stalin. The old Bolsheviks spoke out. It was dangerous, but they conducted the struggle just the same, as was their revolutionary duty, and they paid for it with their lives. Trotsky was assassinated in 1940, because he had told the truth about Stalin, and for no other reason. And tens of thousands of the old Bolsheviks were slaughtered in the Soviet Union because they spoke out against Stalin, and for no other reason. The revolutionary struggle against Stalinism has been the greatest political and ideological struggle in all the history of the working class, by far. And it has left the richest documentary record. The truth is in that literary record, in books and pamphlets and innumerable articles and mimeographed bulletins. It is a great treasury of Marxist thought, and all who want to know the truth should study it conscientiously. If Khrushchev and company were opposed to the Stalinist regime while Stalin was alive and could not speak out openly against it because of the terror, why didn't they organize an underground movement and leave a printed record of their opposition, which could be referred to now? They never made such a record, and they have nothing to refer to, because they were not revolutionists. They were not opponents of the regime which they now condemn.